Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 11th of April. This hour of the program, while we were on our trip to Gettysburg in Washington, a report was issued from Salon.com, which used the new Census Bureau data, and it ranked Milwaukee as the most segregated urban area in America. It's nothing to be proud of. This hour, join you from downtown Milwaukee, where our guests are going to analyze what this means, why this is the case for Milwaukee, and how damaging it may be to the state of Wisconsin to have this be the case. We have two guests with us in our Milwaukee studios. Nathaniel Holton is contributor of the Milwaukee Drum and chair of the Political Action Committee, NAACP, the Milwaukee chapter. Nathaniel, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure. And also joining us is Narayan Leeser, president of the Milwaukee chapter of the Black Alliance for Educational Options. Narayan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's talk about how these areas were determined to be number one, two, three. Are we looking at the city of Milwaukee? Are we looking at Milwaukee County? What are we looking at here?
We're looking at metropolitan Milwaukee, which includes all of Milwaukee County, Waukesha County, Walworth, and Ozaukee. And basically, the Salon article is based on a dissimilarity index, which measures the proportion of the black population that would have to move in order to make metro Milwaukee completely integrated.
And what would that number be?
That number is 81.5%. Yeah.
Are you serious? That's huge.
That is very huge.
That is very huge.
Over 8 out of 10.
Wow. What did both of you think when you heard this report last week? We've heard it before. We know how segregated, those of us who live here, we know how segregated it is, particularly when you look at communities that are very close to Milwaukee but not in Milwaukee. Did this come as any bit of a surprise to you or not?
I guess for me, it really wasn't a surprise. As I was preparing to come to the show, I did some background. In 2002, there was a study that also said Milwaukee was the most segregated. So when you look at the time from then to now, there really haven't been policies or things that have been in place that would have reversed even what happened, you know, based on what happened in 2002. So it didn't come as a surprise. And when you look in and work in a community each and every day, you kind of see it. It just highlights something that you already know. I guess the good part is that it brings a discussion. It brings some visibility, you know, to an issue that has been a problem for decades.
And the problems with having such high levels of segregation would be?
Oh, a wide variety. Basically, what I found is that segregation tends to correlate with things like poverty, things like poor educational outcomes, things like lack of jobs, things like income disparities between black and white populations. Basically, when you have an environment that is as segregated as Metro Milwaukee is, you have basically economic inefficiency. Labor, capital, ideas aren't moving as freely throughout the entire metropolitan area as they otherwise should be, and that's going to result in an economy that's not as strong as we would like it to be.
Mm-hmm. And was there a point when we saw heightened segregation? Did it come when we lost all those great family-supporting jobs that paid pretty decently, and Milwaukee was really filled with industrial kinds of jobs where people could live and work, and it was all good, and then they left?
Well, I guess from my perspective, it existed then, but it wasn't as visible just because people had jobs. And so when you look at, like, now you have segregation, but then you have the loss of industry. And so now you have, you know, increases in poverty and people don't have jobs. And so now it just highlights the problem even more. But I think it existed all throughout. It's just people were able to make a decent living. But I don't see that jobs actually. I think jobs maybe have increased it slightly, but not really aren't the biggest contributing factor. That's mm-hmm. one of the factors, but it's not really growing the problem. There's other things that I think that are, you know, increasing it or even maintaining it more so than the loss of industry.
What are those things?
Well, when you look at some of the reason why even segregation exists, when you look at Well, a big part is the white flight to mm-hmm. some of the suburbs. And when you look at some of the surrounding communities, even when you look at mass transit, there's a focus on highways versus, you know, mass transit. When you look at some of the surrounding communities, some of their ordinances, discourage even, affordable housing. They also discourage, even when you look at a community that has an ordinance that says your house has to be a certain size and your lot has to be a certain size, there are policies that actually discourage lower income people from even migrating to some of those regions. So it kind of solidifies only a certain type, a certain income level or certain socioeconomic level for this community, and it's built in kind of with the policies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think things like that just kind of have done more. Even when you look at some of the other urban areas across the country, some of the same policies here have been some of the contributing factors, even some of those other areas too.
Let's talk about the issue of transit for a moment. It came up during our last hour of conversation. Mike Goucher, as our guest, said that he was citing the figures that 40% of people who live in the central city have no car, mm-hmm. which indicates to me that if you don't have a car and you have a job, you got to have some way to get there. A lot of the jobs are in outlying areas right now and not in the central city. What's a person to do?
Well, that's a really good question, and we need to solve that here in our community. According to Mark Levine in a study they published in 2007, all of the net job growth in metropolitan Milwaukee has occurred in the suburbs. And as Goucher explained, people have a difficult time getting to those jobs. And so it's going to be incredibly difficult for them to, quote-unquote, raise themselves up by the bootstraps if they can't even get to the jobs that do exist. And we, as a community, had a significant movement to attempt to improve transportation that sort of reached a crescendo in 2008 with an advisory referendum where people in Milwaukee County voted in favor of a sales tax to fund transit as well as parks. The Democrats held office in Madison during that time. They eventually wrote a transit bill, made it all the way to Governor Jim Doyle's desk, and he vetoed it. And since then, things have gotten worse, and they will likely continue to get worse as a result of the incoming budget.
Mm-hmm. Another part of this that the salon people were saying is when you look at a city like Chicago, which doesn't fare much better in this, they're number two in terms of segregation, but when you look at other cities, there aren't nearly as many professional minorities who have moved outside the city into surrounding areas, Wauwatosa or Waukesha or whatever. Why is that? Is that indeed very true in Milwaukee, and why would that be the case?
Well, I really can't share any data, so I mean, for me, it would just be kind of a thought, but not I don't have any basis to really support it. With a lot of professional blacks, I find that some from things that have been shared with me, they have trouble gaining entry into some of the professional jobs, and so some have chosen to relocate to other regions. So versus moving to like the outskirts, they've chosen to relocate to other cities. But again, I don't have data to support. I can't give you numbers. But it just seems like there's a challenge to break into some of the different opportunities. While some have been successful, when you look at the masses, people have run into difficulties.
Run into difficulties in terms of getting jobs in suburban areas? Or
In suburban areas, even in the city, some of the professional areas, and just feel like there's not a lot of professional opportunities for an African American. Again, I don't have any data, and you might have some more data that you can share, but it just seems like there's a frustration that it's been hard to kind of break into those opportunities.
For those who have broken into those opportunities, is there an interest in, because it's sort of this natural progression, it isn't for me, but it is for a lot of people, well, you're doing a little bit better, you want better schools, whatever that may be, you want to move to the suburbs where there's less crime, et cetera. Is that the case indeed for black professionals in this area, or is there not a desire for whatever reasons, not feeling welcome or not having a lot of people who share your cultural background in the suburbs? What's keeping that from happening?
Yeah, I think that's less the case in Milwaukee than it may be in other areas. What goes along with the segregation issue in Milwaukee is the racial climate issue, which is very poor compared to a lot of other places, particularly now in the South, cities like Atlanta, Houston, Charlotte. We're losing a lot of our black professionals to those cities, in part because they don't want to deal with the poor racial climate that exists here. And so the black middle class in Milwaukee is very sparse to begin with. And then on top of that, in Milwaukee, a substantial portion of the black middle class are City of Milwaukee employees and MPS employees, and they have to live within the City of Milwaukee. So I think that that contributes a little bit towards the segregation issue, but mostly the racial climate makes black professionals want to move out or not come here in the first place.
And broaden that a little for me. When you talk about racial climate, what are you talking about?
Well, in my experience, in Milwaukee, more so than other cities, a lot of folks have difficulty separating blacks by race. They don't have any exposure to the black population, and so they end up relying on the local news and stereotypes, and they end up putting black folks in a box. And that doesn't exist to this large of an extent in many other places. I think in large part due to the segregation, people don't ever get to know people who don't look like them here compared to other places. And that's a lot to deal with when you're a minority. I mean, it's a constant thing that you can't ever ignore. It's with you 24/7, and a lot of people choose to move away because they just don't want to deal with it. They don't think they have to deal with it. They'd rather move somewhere else where there's a more vibrant black middle class where they can be accepted. And so that's where they end up going.
And if I could just, you know, add to that too, in this community and other communities too, but African Americans often look at that as one homogeneous people. And really, when you look at, I mean, there's a variety of thoughts, a variety of ideals. Even some have chosen to relocate suburbs outside. That's been important to them. Some have chosen to stay in the city. So there's not this one universal thought of this is how African Americans are. And oftentimes when we're always viewed through the lens of somebody's experience that, you know, as you said on the news media, and we're not. I mean, there are black conservatives, liberals, all the whole range. And so it's often says, okay, what do black people, what do African Americans say? And really it's not just one particular thought. It's a variety of perspectives. And I think once people appreciate that and really, you know, see that, you know, that I think that's an important point. We're just viewed as, oh, we all think the same, we all act the same, we all are the same. And that's not, you know, that's not a reality.
What do both of you think, and what would be the outcome of lifting residency requirements for the City of Milwaukee, for teachers and for firefighters? What would happen?
Well, in terms of segregation, in the long term, I believe that it would decrease the segregation metric a little bit for Milwaukee. However, there would be a significant trade-off. Housing values in Milwaukee would absolutely go down because demand for housing in Milwaukee would go down. And when I think about residency, I think about the fact that it is a huge asset for the City of Milwaukee right now. And people at the state level are trying to take it away without any compensation whatsoever. If it does get taken away, which may or may not be a good thing, it could possibly be a good thing if Milwaukee gets a lot in exchange for it. But just having it taken away would be pretty devastating to Milwaukee in the long term, in my opinion.
I would agree. I think it would actually increase segregation because you would get more of the white flight, because I think the residency requirement are what keeps some people in the city. And I think by taking it away, you would actually get more that would choose to relocate to the suburbs or you know, further out communities.
Yeah. And what about white flight? Is that still continuing? And is the reason for white flight what it was 40 years ago when we had huge demonstrations in this city and riots and marches and all kinds of things? Or are there different reasons? Was it just that people, you know, didn't feel uncomfortable with black people and minorities and they wanted to live among their own? Or is it something different?
You know, I think the more things change, the more they stay the same. I think it's all pretty much the same as it was then. Some of the reasons in the 60s, for example, in white flight, you know, there was some racism. There was concerns about housing values, perceptions about crime and violence. All of those exist today. In the 60s, there was an entire movement about open housing, both in the City of Milwaukee and in Milwaukee County and the larger area. Nowadays, you have battles over affordable housing. Basically the same thing, just a different name.
Let's welcome phone calls for both our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the recent report from Salon.com, which has used new census data ranking Milwaukee as the most segregated urban area in America. We're talking about racial inequality this hour of the program, and our phone number, please join us. Lines are open, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Nathaniel Holton is one of our guests, contributor for the Milwaukee Drum, chairman of the Political Action Committee of the Milwaukee chapter of the NAACP. Now, Ryan Leeser is president of the Milwaukee chapter of the Black Alliance for Educational Options. We have one phone line open. You can use that email thing, too, or that whatever you call it. It's, you know, talk at WPR.org. Showing my age, you know, that message thing, where you write things down and we'll see it on our screen. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow, during this time period, tomorrow is the official anniversary of the start of the Civil War 150 years ago tomorrow, with the first shots fired at Fort Sumter. Our guest will be Adam Goodhart, author of 1861, A Civil War Awakening. Here we go with your phone calls. Dave in Kenosha is our first caller. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that racism is a problem statewide all over Wisconsin. It's in our business. It's in our politics. There are people who live in the northern and western portions of the state that specifically avoid southeast Wisconsin so they don't have to encounter black people. It's not a phenomenon isolated just to Milwaukee. It's statewide.
I would agree with your thought. I think in Milwaukee, what we see it concentrated. And so while racism is a countrywide problem, but in Milwaukee, it's concentrated. When you look at segregation, when you look at even when you talk about resources in the city, and so what we're talking about simply is that it's concentrated in Milwaukee, and there are reasons why in Milwaukee, in my opinion, why it's concentrated, and a lot of it is due to, you know, long-term policies and you know, a lot of different issues that we've talked about as far as why it's concentrated here.
There are so many issues involved with this, too, that you look at equal opportunity and jobs and poverty. The amount of poverty that you find in Central City, Milwaukee, and unfortunately it affects minorities in this society still in a huge way. It is huge. The poverty issues are immense, and it keeps schools from being able to flourish, I think, because teachers have to deal with issues of poverty and homelessness and people having to move frequently and not having very stable lives. And that is problematic, isn't it? It's a huge problem.
Absolutely, and that is related to segregation. When you look at the top 10 most segregated metro areas in the country, the primary city in seven of those metro areas are in the top 10 for highest poverty. So this is a very strong correlation. We all know the trouble that poverty brings to not just the impoverished population themselves, but to the entire metro area. And, of course, we need to focus on that. I don't think anybody would dispute that. But what we need to be concerned with in this particular discussion is that segregation relates to that. And so if we want to take action on poverty, we do need to look at segregation in addition to just the poverty or just education or just jobs.
So what would a new model look like? What would be better in terms just of education? Let's take that on. There are lots of other issues. But in terms of schools giving equal opportunities to everybody, the best teachers, the biggest mix of ideas and cultures, et cetera, what's the best answer? Is it to desegregate our schools again and have a countywide kind of system so that everybody's going to school together, rich and poor? Can you take that issue on without taking on the issue of jobs? How do we deal with that?
Well, from my perspective, I don't. I guess one of the caveats that I would say is that oftentimes we think that integration brings better results. And mm-hmm. it almost seems like sometimes like all black school is not good because it's all black. But you would never hear that an all-white school is bad because it's all white. And so part of the issue, I think, is there some examples of, even in our community, of schools that have high, you know, high incidence of students in poverty that do well? And so, one of the ways to transform is to begin, producing great schools. And there are plenty of examples in our community and even in Chicago of communities that no excuses, whether kids are poor or not, they can educate young people. And a perfect example in our community is Milwaukee College Prep. I think 98% of their students are on free or reduced lunch, yet they are successful and their scores often exceed the state average. In our community, down to, in Chicago, actually Englewood College Prep. They deal with students of high poverty, and they are successful moving them, educating them, advancing them, and moving them into college. And so I think quality schools, whether they're – and I think if they're all black, fine. It's not a matter of whether they're integrated or not. I think integration is good because we learn from each other. But I think the biggest thing is quality schools in which kids are being educated and prepared for the future. I think that alone would drive integration because, if you improve the schools, you would improve the desire of people to locate. Because a lot of reason why people move to different places, they want better schools. And so if you have quality schools, that alone, could make a huge difference, mm-hmm. For all people.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
For the most part, I think it's a chicken and egg discussion when you talk about people moving back to Milwaukee because the schools are better versus trying to improve the schools, which comes first. That's a pretty complex discussion, and the debate between integration and local control over education has been something that's been going on in Milwaukee for decades, and people have bounced back and forth on that, and I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong answer. Mm-hmm. I do believe that improved integration generally in metropolitan Milwaukee would probably come with better education outcomes. But at the same time, of course, better funding of schools and better management of schools and better programs would certainly help, regardless of whether they're segregated or integrated.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I'm just an old white lady now who believes in the value of integration. But let me say this, and I'm interested in your response. I grew up in a pretty much, they were migrant workers, but I grew up in a pretty much all-white suburban area of Chicago. And I got to tell you that it has been one of the guiding forces of my family's life to make sure that we don't have our children grow up that way. And that, that to me, it makes a huge difference whether or not a school is integrated and whether or not a community is integrated, because this is America. And I do think that segregation creates inequality because we haven't gotten rid of this issue of race. And so it still is a desire of mine to see this, who we are as America, reflected in our schools and reflected in our communities. And it appalls me that it is not, because I think we lead much richer lives and our chances of getting ahead are better if we're all in this together, if we're living next door, if we're going to school together, et cetera, that we some of those prejudices fall away. Am I just an old white lady now?
No, absolutely
with
not.
These thoughts or what?
I completely agree with that. I'm biracial. I'm accustomed to diverse settings, and I feel that I'm a much better person and have a much larger, wider perspective on the world because of the diversity that I've been raised with and live in.
I imagine.
And I think that it's something that everybody could benefit from. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I agree with your thoughts. Your thoughts also. The only thing that bothers me sometimes is that there's this impression that if it's all black, it's inherently inferior. And as long as that is not part of the equation, if it's all black, it has to be not as good because it's all black. I agree that people learn from each other and people living amongst each other, different cultures. I do think we put way too much emphasis on race, but it is a reality. And when you do the numbers, the reality of how many African Americans stay in the city and how many whites, you aren't. There are going to be some schools that aren't integrated because you don't even have the numbers. And
I agree with your thoughts.
I agree completely. But again, just as long as we don't, there's this impression that if it's all black, it's inferior. But if it's all white, you don't have the same impression. And that's what bothers me.
Yeah, I see your point.
Because you can have all black in quality, just like you can have all white in quality. But again, everybody together, I think, does accomplishes a lot mm-hmm. more, and people understand each other, and some of the issues will go away when people start understanding and knowing each other. But if people's only experience with other people are through the news media, through these other sources that only show one side, of course they're going to form these opinions. And so I definitely agree.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave, very much for your call. Al in Meadow Lakes. Hi, Al.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for the show. It's very interesting. I grew up in Milwaukee. I loved Milwaukee, but I left in the mid-70s. And I love watching John Gerda's The Making of Milwaukee because I actually knew Father Grappi and was there for the riots. And I was there when they used to march over the viaducts, you know, to try to integrate the South Side. And I was there, I believe it was the 16th Street Viaduct. And I've never seen anything like that in my life. These people were just out of their minds with hatred. And, of course, there was the riots. That's 45 years ago now. But what scares me about all this is history repeating itself, you know, class war, whatever you want to call it. I think Milwaukee is ready to do this again. And I would hate to see it happen because it would be much worse than it was in 1967. I have a friend whose son is going to UW-Milwaukee, and was going to be a teacher, and he did a student teacher, and it just scared the hell out of him. So he completely blew off being a teacher. I mean,
What scared him?
What scared him was the way that the kids treated him. You know, he was in a black school, and you know, he was a white guy from northern Wisconsin, and he was scared for his life. You know, the way they talked to him. You can't get any respect because there's no corporal punishment. I was brought up in a...
Ooh. Yeah, I know a lot of white teachers who teach in MPS, and I don't think they fear for their lives. Do they? I don't think it's a huge problem.
No, I think teachers who understand their students and interact with their students and of course, have, you know, command of the classroom can be successful, but it also comes into he has to do just as much to understand his students and understand their backgrounds in order to be effective.
Yeah.
And there are white teachers that are effective, and so yeah, so I don't necessarily fully agree with that.
Yeah, there's a lot of that I think is a disjunct in communication style and how people talk and a perception of violence that really is just the way that people act in some ways, and that it's not actually going to be violent. It just sounds that way because of gusto or whatever else. At the same time, you know, a lot of these kids may not respect authority. They may not have grew up with strong authority figures, and that's something that we have to be honest about and that we have to be stronger with in demanding, you know, better attitudes, acting better in terms of kids in public schools. I mean, there's been too many incidents of violence and of acting out, and that shouldn't be acceptable, and we shouldn't just attempt to explain it away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Al. Gary is next in Merrill. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hello. The NAACP, I've always thought, was very racist in just the words that you use for the organization.
Why?
It's National racist? Association for the Advancement of Colored People?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem racist to you?
No. Why does it seem why does it seem racist to you?
Just the words, the advancement of colored people as opposed to everybody else.
Well, why were they formed? Why was the NAACP formed?
I don't know why they're formed. I'm just talking about what it sounds like to I guess, somebody who don't know why they're formed.
A brief history of the NAACP.
Sure. Well, it's about a century old. The name is from the way that we talked and the words that we used 100 years ago. Right now, what you have to understand is that everybody is a colored person. White is a color, too. And with the Milwaukee branch of the NAACP, our first vice president is white and our treasurer is white. We're an integrated organization, and we want to support all people in Milwaukee, regardless of color.
Here's an email that's come in from Craig in Springstead. Waukesha County is being sued based on the accusation of misusing HUD funds by not using the money that they have received to create low-income housing. What do you think about this?
Well, I think it's, I guess my first question would be, did they use the funds for low-income housing? If they didn't, then maybe they should be sued. And I don't know the details, but I guess it's, you know, when I listen to some of the news stories about some of the surrounding communities and their fight against allowing low-income housing, I guess it doesn't surprise me. But again, I don't really know the details, but if it's accurate, then some of the changes, like when you look at some of the changes that have helped kind of make things equal, federal policy has, you know, federal policy and the push from the federal government has helped to drive some changes that the states have not been willing or haven't done a whole lot on. And so if that's the case, if it's accurate, I agree completely that sometimes you have to force people's hands.
Yeah, I completely agree. That suit was brought by the Metropolitan Milwaukee Fair Housing Council, which does a lot of wonderful work. And the crux of it is that there isn't enough affordable housing in the suburbs. And I think that any reasonable analysis of zoning and of housing in the suburbs shows that that is absolutely the case. Now, they're taking federal dollars supposedly to use it to broaden affordable housing and things like that, and they just haven't been doing it. And I'm really proud to see someone taking them to task for that.
We go to Alex in Milwaukee next. Hi, Alex.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good, and you have two really great guests, a great conversation. I live in the central city of Milwaukee. I grew up in Whitefish Bay, have a lot of family in Waukesha, and I just wanted to address one of the previous comments about MPS. My son goes to an MPS school, outstanding results, better than the school I grew up in going to Whitefish Bay, and I think so much of this is perception, as you guys have talked about, and I just wanted to share one quick story and get your reaction. I was setting up an interview for a reporter from Fox 6 News to come into the central city. He had a great experience, great neighbors. Everyone was law-abiding, friendly, polite. And he came to me afterwards and he said, Alex, I was really shocked. I thought this was going to be like Baghdad. Mm-hmm. He said, I thought I was going to need a bulletproof jacket. And I said, I thought to myself, I thought, man, if the reporter from this local media station thinks this, what are his viewers supposed to think? Mm-hmm. And I think there's so many stories, and I think both your guests have talked about this. I wanted to just get your reaction about the constant, you know, beating the drum of Milwaukee's bad, and then the subtle messages or not so subtle messages that African Americans are, you know, more likely to create criminal activity or whatever, which is not true, and how does that play into the segregation?
Well, absolutely. I mean, segregation is a huge cause of that. A lot of the folks who think that, you know, Milwaukee is Baghdad have virtually never been in Milwaukee. They just get that from the news. There's a lot of people who will literally not drive through the north side. They will go way around and take the highway if they're going from east to west because they think that something will happen to them if they simply drive through the north side. Mm-hmm. So not only do they don't know anybody who lives in the north side and they've never had any experiences, but they don't even want to see it. And that is a major perception issue. There are great neighborhoods throughout the city of Milwaukee. There are wonderful people throughout the city of Milwaukee. It is not Baghdad. It is not a war zone. But the only way that you can know that is to actually go there. And we don't because we're hyper-segregated here in Milwaukee.
And I would add, too, is that it's also not just a perception that white people have, but also black people. There's black people that have some of the same perception because if your interaction is mainly from the news, you get this one-sided viewpoint. And there's a lot of good things that are going on, you know, in the central city of Milwaukee overall. And it's just and that's why I think the integration point is important, that as people interact with each other, they see it destroys those stereotypes. People have a stereotype of a person, but when they interact with a person and it's different, it can't help but to alter that stereotype. Even if they don't acknowledge it, the more interactions, the more you would begin to alter that stereotype. And I think, again, I know people – I know one person who used to drive around the inner city, and then later they start teaching the inner city, and it has changed their whole impression.
Thank you, Alex, very much for the call. We go next to Ed in Brookfield. Hi, Ed.
Hi, hello. Say, my little story is, before I moved to Brookfield, I went to McKinley Street School till I was 9, then we moved to Brookfield. But anyway, in the 90s, my nephew was working at a store in Butler, And they were on Peter Jennings' news because they were selling two AK-47 or Belgium assault rifles and so forth for $8.99 for a buddy pack. You'd get two of them in 1,000 rounds. And they sold thousands of them to people in Brookfield because they were afraid of blacks coming out from Milwaukee robbing their house. And this was a typical stereotype kind of due to separation.
Ed, are you serious? They sold thousands of them?
Have like one, if somebody gets in a hassle with a black, then they'll think all blacks are bad. You know, when I went to McKinley Street School, I fussed and fight with blacks. That was one guy that wasn't everybody in the world. So that's my comment.
All right. Thank you very much for the call.
Well, he makes a great point when he says that if somebody ever has a negative encounter with a black person, they take it out on the entire race. I mean, a lot of people, when they watch the local news and they see that a black man committed a crime, they'll say, oh, what's up with those people? What's wrong with them? When a white person commits the same crime, it's what is wrong with that person? You know, they don't do that same thing to the white population. They could have a negative experience with white people, and it doesn't faze their overall opinion of white people. In terms of the fear, I mean, for example, that's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to move on the transit issue. You know, a lot of folks in Brookfield simply don't want to see any black people ever. And so they don't want to advance transit. They don't want to give folks in the inner city any opportunity to go out to Waukesha. And that's a major problem.
Yeah.
I was going to say, even one of the responses to the Salon article, one of people responded that they moved because they didn't want anywhere near Section 8 housing, any kind of affordable housing. So and they just went on, and so they moved even further out, and just because of their perception. It wasn't an accurate perception. But people, you know, it drives people for whatever reason.
So what is the perception among you both are young, intellectual African-Americans? You have a certain group of people, I'm sure, that you probably socialize. You know, well, this is stereotypical on my part. Who knows who you socialize with? But you have friends who are highly educated, who look at what communities, where is a better place to be? It's Milwaukee is the most segregated in terms of where you are in life. What's the most open place to be? What's the attractive place for young black professionals?
Well, the attractive place lately has been, like I mentioned earlier, southern cities like Atlanta and Houston. You also have Washington, D.C., places that already have a large black middle class where you can go there and just slide in and fit in and be amongst people like yourself and not be judged and not be stereotyped.
And do you feel as though you may want to do that at some point? Do you guys get discouraged and you want to go to some place that's more welcoming?
Well, I guess for me, I just feel like my roots are here and I want to see my community change. And so I made, you know, kind of a long-term investment that, you know, I'll be here. There was, you know, a point in my life that, you know, the city, I could have took it or leave it. And so I think my parents being here and you know, later my parents being coming ill may have kept me in the city when before was you get a chance, you get a job, you make some nice money, and then you see other things and you say, well, why doesn't my community have that? So you want some of the conveniences that other communities have that have a lot of resources. But my commitment is here just to try to improve this community, the community that I grew up in.
Yeah,
same story for me. I mean, when I went away for college at one point, you know, when I was younger, I didn't think I was ever going to come back because of these issues that we're discussing. But as I started to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, you know, I wanted to be able to make a difference. And I thought, well, I need to go back to my hometown because they need as many people like me, frankly, as they can possibly get who are willing to stay here and put in the work and, you know, kind of take the bullets to sort of raise a black middle class and work on some of these poverty and segregation issues. So I'm here, I'm invested, and I'm happy to be here. It's unfortunate that we're talking about so many negative things about Milwaukee because we do have so much going for us. But we do have to be honest and out front on these issues. We need to do that first before we can take any action.
Yeah. Thanks, Ed, for your call. We go next to Rich in Sullivan. Rich was on the Washington trip. I miss you, Rich.
Well, thanks, Kathleen. That takes some doing in my case.
We had a good journey.
It was a wonderful trip.
Yeah, it was good.
Let me begin by saying I really believe there are good people everywhere, and The basis for my comment is over a third of a century of teaching at a technical college in Waukesha County, Wisconsin, which is in Pewaukee, just to the east of Milwaukee. During boom times, Waukesha County was looking for workers, and there was a serious discussion, and I do mean a serious discussion, of how through our international programs we might import workers from Eastern Europe. Many people know that during the boom times in Ireland, a lot of Poles, Lithuanians, and others went to Ireland in order to work, and so the concept is the same there. The few African Americans who were on staff at Waukesha County Technical College thought it was ironic that we were looking to Eastern Europe and how to get work permits for people with cultural backgrounds that were not very different from some of the residents of Waukesha County, when there was this huge untapped labor pool immediately to our east, high unemployment, need for affiliation with two-year associate degree colleges and so on and so forth. And the reason I tell this story is I think the people are good people, but I think of myself as a good person most of the time. Kathleen may be able to say something.
No, I second that, Rich.
but the point is that I think when things are so thoroughly ingrained culturally in a region or an area, even good people don't see past their biases. Mm.
And Rich, I would agree to an extent, you know, with that comment. That's one of the reasons why when people have certain biases, certain viewpoints, I try to understand where did it come from, what's driving it, rather than getting mad and upset, try to understand where it came from. And then the other end of that is that even though they have that bias, even though they, you know, have that opinion, here's, you know, what needs to change or what needs to happen. So I do, I guess I don't get upset over somebody's bias because I know we're all products of our environments, and how we're socialized really shapes our views. But, the one thing that is ironic is that that's just one example that also happened, like with some of the in the Dales. They actually reached out to a lot of workers from, you know, overseas. And you do have this large untapped, mm-hmm. you know, people who are unemployed who desire to work, but then there's this impression that, oh, they don't want to work and things like that. And when I look at the African-American community, there are some people who don't want to work, have no intentions. There's some people who want to work, some people who are hard workers. There's a wide variety, just like any other community. But you have this huge untapped labor pool that is willing to work, and for a lot of them, it's just transportation. But if some of the same things were, you know, some of the same recruitment, it would be a lot cheaper just to import people from the central city than it would be to go to Eastern Europe. You know, it's just like there's a lot of solutions that, sometimes it seems like easy solutions to problems. You know, increase our transit. And you know, for a while there's jobs in some of the surrounding counties that they couldn't get workers. Why not increase transit? But there's such a resistance to even those things. So then you have to ask the question, you know, why? You know, why is there such a resistance? Is it intentional? And then it boils down to this, you know, the some of the same issues, racism and people's prejudice, people's opinions of others.
Milwaukee, the most segregated urban area in America. We're talking about the recent report from Salon.com based on the new Census Bureau data, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's take this one email. We have so many of them, and we didn't get to all of them. Leroy in Burlington. While I've seen the Salon.com map showing the segregation by race, which was stunning, I think we're missing a larger issue, just as we always have in the U.S. The amount of segregation by wealth level would be even more telling. While poverty is highly correlated to race and vice versa, our unwillingness to discuss class in this country leads us to false conclusions.
Absolutely, there's economic segregation as well as racial segregation. The income disparity between the black and white populations in Milwaukee is amongst the worst in the country. So when you look at racial segregation and economic segregation in Milwaukee, they're one and the same, more or less. In terms of talking about class, absolutely. I think there's been a lot of discussions in the national discourse about class warfare and things of this nature, and we should look at it in economic terms, but I think we would be lying to ourselves if we said that it was all about class and it had nothing to do with race.
We go next to Doss from Reidsville. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Fine. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good, good. I've been listening to you for years.
I've been on for years.
I called the first time. This is the first time I'm calling.
Oh, my. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
But anyway, congratulations to the NAACP. I'm very happy to see the chair of the Political Action Committee on there.
Thank you.
I grew up in Milwaukee from 1938 until I retired about 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. Now I live in Reeseville. A little small town. I live out in the country. But I could give you 1,000 different examples of segregation, desegregation, racism, and so on. And not one of them would be new. We are all aware of that. And I have great hopes for the association there in Milwaukee, especially, as a past president. I know what's going on with a lot of things, and I have great hope for you, Alex, I believe it is, and James, as president. You've got a good board there now, and do a very good job with it. Proactive, buddy. Proactive. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your service. President James Hall, president of the Milwaukee branch of the NAACP, is a fantastic man. I've had a pleasure working with him. He doesn't have a large ego. He wants to work with everybody, and we're an open, integrated organization that is just focused on improving quality of life in Milwaukee, and we have a lot of work to do.
Did you go from city to rural, Doss, and found that quite a transition in your life? Oh, he's gone. That's a big change, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Ralph in Milwaukee. Hi, Ralph.
Morning. I was wondering if the guests could tell me their opinion regarding the school voucher system proposal that's in the governor's budget to lift the income gap versus what the voucher program was initially meant to be for low income. And were people like Howard Fuller and Polly Williams, well, I hate to say it, but this is the word that comes to mind, tricked, fooled into seeing what they thought was good at the time, but now it's being, in my opinion, potentially abused, and I was wondering what your guests thought.
Well, my thoughts and my organization, we are opposed to lifting the income requirement for the voucher program because its original intent was to help low-income students, and completely doing away from lifting the income, you know, requirement would kind of go against even why the program was created in and of itself. And I don't think Annette Polly Williams and Dr. Fuller were duped or into supporting something, because when you look at those two individuals, one thing that is clear is that their motivation is always about improving the lot of the lives of black kids located in Central City whose educational outcomes have been so poor. And using that means as, you know, improving, also realizing that that could be a reality in the future. And so, again, we're opposed to it. I'm personally opposed to it because that's not the intent of the program. But I just think that Annette Polly Williams and Dr. Fuller are extremely smart people and care about the community. And I don't think they were duped. I think they knew from the start that that was something that could happen. But it was worth taking a chance if it improves the lives of young people in the city.
Give me, we're running out of time here, and I want to make sure that we come up with some positive options. Give our audience some ideas of what we could do to decrease segregation in this community rapidly.
Well, first is to raise the prominence of the segregation issue in the public conscience that people are thinking about it. The people of Milwaukee, Metro Milwaukee, have to want this to get moved on in order for anything to happen. So the first thing is getting it in the public conscious. The second thing is doing the work that the Fair Housing Council is doing, trying to increase affordable housing throughout Metro Milwaukee. That is a significant issue. You can also look at giving folks incentives to live in areas where they may be a minority. I mean, you can really think outside of the box on this issue, which I think is something that we in Milwaukee really need to do because it's an enormous problem. And frankly, nobody has done anything about it for years. It's been a problem for decades. It's nothing new. Nothing has happened, and we need to change that.
Well, why is that? Why does it sit around and we're ashamed of it, and it affects people's lives, and nobody just sort of takes on the charge to do something. Why isn't it front and center?
Well, from my opinion, I think that some people really don't see it as a problem. Some people don't really even agree that racism exists. As some people really think that, oh, it's just people complaining, whining and complaining, racism doesn't exist. And from my opinion, and I don't necessarily always have real positive views of politicians, I think some lack the courage. And if it's not, if it doesn't get them more votes, or if it's not something popular that resonates with the people, they won't take it on. And I just think, in my opinion, again, is, you know, my opinion is that many just lack the courage and are out to serve their own interests.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's a controversial issue. That is a big risk for any politician to take on, and a lot of the politicians in Milwaukee are risk averse. They don't want to deal with it. Also, you know, anything having to do with race is going to be controversial, and because of the way that society is, if a white politician tries to take this on, it'll be about 3 seconds before somebody calls them a racist.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately, I think when we just look at the reality of it, it would have to be some black politicians that would really move on this
issue. Thank you both so much. It was a very interesting hour. Thanks. Our thanks to Nathaniel Holton, contributor for the Milwaukee Drum, chair of the Political Action Committee of the NAACP, Narayan Leeser, president of the Milwaukee chapter of the Black Alliance for Educational Options. Thanks very much to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Chrissy Pease, our on-air producer, will be with you again tomorrow. Thanks, everybody, for listening.